and some banter. So, Patrick, are you done rebooting?
I am. I am. Now, you should reboot every day, I think.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, but you should be able to control when you reboot. I think that's kind of a good
feature. I almost spit water all over my microphone.
That takes all the fun out of it. Mm-hmm. I just send a random counter and let it reboot.
We really think somebody's attacking Patrick's computer, because every time we do this Zencastr recording, something happens. Patrick just freezes, or he reboots, or goes away. And
so if you hear a Carl and I swearing, that's probably why.
I love.
I saw you blink. You can't fool me.
I do love to do that in some Zoom meetings where I'll just freeze.
Yeah,
and see what they say.
Mock freeze.
Usually Dwayne will say something mean at that point.
I will. I'm always saying mean things.
It'd be great if you had a hotkey for your webcam software. You could just freeze it,
mm-hmm.
and then just watch everybody else. Listen to what they say about you.
You have to hack the feed.
Oh, Patrick's frozen. Let's talk about him. Hey, guys. Dwayne, welcome back.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Good. Patrick?
Very, very good.
Yeah. It was a busy week. And I think that, you know, it was a ransomware themed week, if I'm not mistaken.
Isn't every week?
I was going to say, yeah, when is not a ransomware week?
There was one back in 98.
Yeah. I think every other week they put in data breaches and then ransomware. It's, you know, they go back and forth, which is cool.
Yeah. But we only have two or three out of six or seven ransomware stories today. But let's start with the nuclear engineer espionage plans unraveled by undercover FBI agent.
You gotta love that.
Yeah, you know what? I love these stories. I don't know why. It's I don't know if it's growing up on, you know, reading James Bond films, or, you know, getting sucked into all of the dark world of hacker espionage spy stuff. But
you know, you are the only person I know who's ever read a James Bond film. Just point of clarity.
You're probably right. Listen, I like to download the transcript and just read the movie. Not even the book, just the movie.
He turns it into code and then debugs it.
Yeah.
I act out
for
all
me,
the
it's the anonymous masks. You know, that's
haunting, yes.
Haunting.
Yeah. So this story I find super interesting when it came across the feed is I love to see the spy craft, like the trade craft. And even though it involves digital data, there's a great sort of Netflix series, I think it's called Spycraft, where they go through a lot of the trade crafty things that spies do. But in this particular case, it looks like it's a husband and wife team. Jonathan and Diane Toby. Sounds
T-O-E-B-B-E.
Like, yeah, how you'd pronounce that.
Yeah, sounds good enough.
Sold confidential information, including printouts, digital media files containing technical details, operation manuals, and performance reports on a nuclear engineering project, it looks like. And they were found out by the FBI. But the way it's interesting is with all this, like, the ability to steal data and send it encrypted to places and that sort of stuff, a lot of the classic spy tradecraft things are still there. So in this particular case, data stolen, data gets encrypted and put it on a little SD card. What do you do with that SD card? How do you get it to your handler who's going to pay you for this data?
Well, clearly you have to put it in a peanut butter sandwich.
Probably clearly. The first spy ever to go, you know what? PB&J. That's what I'm going to do.
That's what they did. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a full PB&J. It was half a PB&J sandwich. So it's almost like, you know what? I'm sitting here for a while. I'm going to eat half of this. Then I'm going to jam an SD card.
You're just asking for somebody to bite into it and ruin it. I mean, what?
Right.
You know?
So, you know, it's an
interesting
article.
Put it in something
article.
People will ignore.
The other thing they used was a chewing gum package. It's fascinating to watch. But if you watch that Netflix special on spycraft, they talk about a lot of interesting things there, like even using dead animals sometimes as a drop, you know, where they take a dead animal and sew them up with data inside, or microfiche or whatever.
You need something no one's going to mess with.
Exactly.
Yeah, stick it up your butt.
Your prison pocket.
Nobody's going to mess with my butt.
Is that called your prison pocket?
I hope not. Hey, welcome to the podcast, children.
Well, it has to be the micro SD cards, though, not those big ones.
Not the old, yeah, the attachable drives.
As technology marches on, so do the places we can hide.
Poor spies data. In the zip drive days where they're like, oh.
Just don't forget and go to the bathroom, right?
Oh.
So very interesting in that, you know, and actually they were paid in crypto. So the FBI wow. paid him $70,000 in crypto to get the decryption keys for this SD card and then found out, yep, they're valid plans. And
wow.
When's the execution?
Yeah, right.
That's Patrick's always our, yeah, Patrick's always our punishment straight man.
So I know two people, good friends of mine, whose kids are on nuclear submarines. This is yep. like... They're putting their lives in danger. We take this very seriously. So, I mean, I know they probably won't get executed and no, I'm a little no. bummed out about that, but I think they should be.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll get the hate mail now. Sure, or maybe not. Sure maybe we will. Mail. Who knows?
Bring it on.
So it's kind of an espionage story, but it's got a twinge of ransomware in it, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah.
It has a ransomware aspect.
Which is nice. So it's got that yeah. going for
is
it.
Is that the theme? Ransomware?
It
can't
know.
Be prison
we'll
pockets.
How about ransomware and peanut butter?
Ransomware up your butt. All right, what's next?
That's a good question. So there's a couple different articles we can go with here that were interesting.
Let's do the killware next.
Ooh, killware. Ooh,
that's similar to what we talked about last week with the hospital. Yeah. Well, this is right. intentional.
Right.
Yeah, so there's definitely a greater target on infrastructure. And we all know that, right? Being in the cybersecurity business, we've heard for years about people targeting, water treatment plants, targeting electrical grids, targeting hospitals.
Well, they used to be taboo. It used to be that, well, that would start a war. And now we've seen that it doesn't.
Yeah, and yeah. we actually even talked about it in one of our ransomware sessions probably 3 or 4 episodes ago where – you know, there was, I think it was Colonial Pipeline was arguing mm-hmm. back and forth with the ransomware saying, hey, listen, we're critical infrastructure. And they were like, nah, not really.
it's like a kid getting hit by a ball in bombardment or dodgeball and saying, hey, I thought I was safe.
Right. Right. Where's my professional courtesy?
Right. So it's interesting in that there are some ransomware gangs out there that have some honor among thieves and don't attack critical infrastructure, don't want to hurt people. And then there are others who that's their target. Take a look at the water treatment plant in Florida. I can't remember. It's in the article, but there was a water treatment plant in Florida that was breached. And luckily,
too many chemicals were added.
In yep, February.
And, yeah.
An unknown hacker remotely accessed a water treatment plant in Oldsmar, Florida, attempted to poison the water supply by increasing the sodium hydroxide to toxic levels, mm-hmm. which is lye and caustic soda.
Yeah.
Yikes.
That's crazy. We count on.
Right, exactly. So take that, for example, as just a small, portion of what possibly could happen. I mean, hitting a lot more water treatment plants or hitting, you know, overloading pressure on the gas pipelines. Or I believe at one point there was a dam in New York that was controlled by hackers. I don't want to point at North Korea, but I think North Korea had said they claimed responsibility for it, where they could open the dam floods and have flood a particular area. So we're definitely seeing it more and more where, you know, ransomware is dangerous, but killware, we'll start to see more people, you know, having
issues. Got to make sure they don't open the dam levees.
Right. Yeah. And there's I want to say there's even a court case right now where one of the hospitals.
Yeah. We mentioned that last week. Got the it. Baby yeah. died
yeah.
because of the ransomware, and they're calling it malpractice
right.
because they didn't protect the hospital.
Right.
This is the kind of thing that will help focus attention on actually stopping this. And I think, you know, I said it before, I'll say it again. I think outlawing paying of the ransom is the first step to preventing it. If it's not profitable, there's a lot of people who will stop doing it. And then all we'll be left with is the political actors, and then attribution will be easier.
Yeah, I was going to say, for this particular threat, do you think this was the – or this attack, do you think it was the top of the – are we talking about the top of the pyramid here, the government actors?
So it's hard.
City states?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. You would hope that nation state actors would follow some form of wartime Geneva Convention thing where they're not going to be attacking citizens and causing harm. You know, you're not going to.
They won't.
Yeah, you're not dropping a bomb in the middle of a civilian city.
What's the difference between that and poisoning people with?
Yeah, it's a terrorist dream come true.
It is a terrorist attack. So here's the thing: if that water thing hadn't been caught, and 100 people had been poisoned or killed, we'd be calling that the biggest terrorist, you know, the most nefarious terrorist attack in years. It would be bigger than the Boston bomb.
I would hope at a nation state level. Like, I get it from terrorists, right? They're looking to cause as much fear and damage as possible. But I would hope at a nation state level, like, you know, Germany, right? They're not going to go out and hack some foreign nation and be like, "Oh, let's shut down the power grid."
Well, let's talk about in this. You're talking about a principled nation that actually acts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's talk about North Korea.
Them are state sponsored terrorists.
Yeah, it's. I wouldn't doubt. I'd say it's probably 50-50 whether a country would have done that. But it's probably more like a fringe nation like North Korea, where they just believe they're above all the civic laws.
Well, it's a good way for them to project their power. I mean, they don't have a massive military. But on the internet, North Korea is a very strong force, right? So they can instill a lot of fear without having a massive army.
Well, they're a strong force until you blockade them, and you got to get China to play along.
Here come the tomahawks.
Always got to mention tomahawks.
Send in tomahawks. All right, story number three. NSA warns of wild card certificate risks, provides mitigation. So wild card certificates, first of all, a certificate is what a website uses to prove that they are legit when you go to their website and use encryption, which you can tell the data is encrypted between you and them because the URL starts with HTTPS and you see the little lock next to it to the left. So in order to do that, you have to get a certificate that proves you are who you say you are. And usually they're mapped to a domain like securitythisweek.com. But then you have to either get a separate certificate for every complete domain, like www.securitythisweek.com
mail.
Or mail.securitythisweek.com. Or what you can do is get a more expensive wildcard certificate, which means the first part of that, you know, mail, www, or whatever, doesn't matter what it is. Anything at securitythisweek.com is covered by this wildcard certificate. So now, apparently, if you have a wild card certificate, propping up your website, there are some risks involved. Apparently,
yeah. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm still digging into a lot of the risks here. It's a pretty the crux of it is a pretty complicated attack. Let me the name of the attack is the Application Layer Protocol Allowing Cross Protocol Attack.
Alpaca.
I always wonder if somebody just throws a bunch of words together to come up with a cool acronym, but the Alpaca attack.
Acronym first development.
Right, exactly.
Acronym driven development.
I can't tell you how many times we've sat in a boardroom to come up with a piece of software and we're like, what acronym could we have? And then just make
up for it. Wait, acronym driven development is ADD.
That should totally be a thing.
So, oh, I'm sorry.
So when the NSA describes this, one of the steps is a means for the malicious actor to redirect victim network traffic intended. So you've got to be man in the middle to pull this off.
Yeah. And you got to do things like either DNS poisoning, the network.
This is a Wi-Fi. This is an attack that if you had man in the middle through Wi-Fi exploitation, that's when I think this would be.
Yeah, you could do it through Wi-Fi. Absolutely. If you're on the same network, this is much easier to do. If you were to compromise like a company's core router, you could do it. But honestly, at that point, there's all sorts of other things you could do. You wouldn't need to do these types of things. So yeah, I think you're more right. It's if somebody compromises like Wi-Fi and jumps on your network, what could they potentially do?
Or right. if you leave your Wi-Fi open and you have a guest network and you're doing things that you shouldn't be doing. Like when you're on a guest Wi-Fi or an open Wi-Fi, you shouldn't be checking your bank account. You shouldn't be
– shouldn't have access to local resources, only the internet.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, and take, for example, like, let's say we had a SharePoint server internally for documentation, and then we had our web server or our, you know, our mail server where it's owa.securitythisweek.com. And I might be opening up the mail server and then being able to, then I go to take a look at our SharePoint site and, you know, I'm now man in the middle and performing the Alpaca attack. But
you're reaching.
The crux of this attack, though, like we're talking about here, is it's very complicated. And it requires very certain things to be in play. Like you need to be on the network. You need to have poisoned either DNS or be man in the middle. For those of you actually I've realized who may not know what DNS poisoning is. So DNS poisoning is where
you eat too many DNSs.
It's where you take down Facebook. No, wait, that's entirely different.
Oh, that was last week.
Yeah, it was. So DNS poisoning is where, you know, if I go to www.microsoft.com, right, that gets resolved in reverse on the internet. So you go find the .com servers, and then those tell you where the Microsoft servers are, and then the Microsoft DNS server tells you where www is.
Yeah.
But if I can circumvent that system, I can tell your computer, no. No need to go all the way out there. I've already cached where that address is. It's over here and point it somewhere else, right? And there's several ways to do that, but that would be one way of poisoning.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about DNS last week because of the Facebook outage, but the upside is that my kids now know what DNS is.
Mm. Which is awesome.
Delicious, nutritious snacks?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I'm usually a pretty... mean interviewer, and we had one engineer who wanted to get hired, and it was an intern.
Spoiler: I got the job,
but he's on probation. And you know, I handed this poor kid comes in as an intern. He's like, okay, you know, and he's wicked nervous. And I grabbed a whiteboard marker and I handed it to him. He was like, okay, what do you want? And I said, okay, there's that whiteboard over there. Describe how the internet works.
Good.
And he did a great job. I mean, he was coming out of industry, but into the tech industry, but he did a great job of working out how the internet works and where traffic goes and deep dive. You know, we started talking about DNS, and you know, I used that as a training session, like, hey, what don't you know? And let me fill in those gaps and then see whether he can adapt to it and that sort of stuff, which is
nice. That's good. I like that.
There you go.
All right, so the long and short of this story is we're not really sure what the risks are yet, but just make sure that you're all patched up.
I think the big lesson is you got to patch, but you also have to be conscious of when you're on a not secure network. So like you're at a hotel, you're on a cruise ship, when you're using Wi-Fi that other people are on, that's a big or a network that other people are on. That's a big thing. This is more of a mid-level in the threat pyramid. This is not something that a script kiddie is going to exploit.
And for God's sakes, if you don't have passwords on your shared, you know, folders and things.
Tell us where that is.
Yeah, tell us where that is so we can come and sit in your driveway and connect to you. You know, so you should never just allow everybody to access a share. Yeah, especially if you're being exposed to a Wi-Fi network. All right, what's next? Oh, I knew we couldn't get through a show without talking about Russia.
I don't think we're ever going to get through a show without Russia and China.
It's pretty tough to go anything about security without those two.
Yeah.
So
are they
next.
Feeling left out?
They were feeling a little neglected last week.
I don't know why. So you're the White House and you decide, you know what I'm going to do? Ransomware is destroying businesses. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put together a council. We're going to sit down. We're going to figure out what we can do about this ransomware, but you don't want to do it alone, right? You got the entire world that needs protecting.
Right.
So you invite 30 countries. That's what the White House did.
Yeah. Except there were two that were left out.
Belize and Costa Rica.
No, I think it was Russia and China.
Russia and China not invited, left out of
the meeting for you.
Global anti-ransomware meetings at the White House.
You got to think they had spies there, though. I mean, they had to have.
You know what? Maybe looking on the bright side, maybe the White House was like, listen, those guys already know a lot about ransomware. They don't need to sit in on these meetings.
Oh, yeah, sure.
To learn more about, you know, how we can stop it.
Right.
So
all they're going to do is object.
Well, yeah. No, it's not a problem. It's fine. It's okay.
Hello, Yuri. They're on to us. We need to switch tactic.
That wasn't offensive at all, was it?
That's where we're going to get the hate mail.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm glad we don't take mail.
There was a DHL or a FedEx thing where, you know, there was some like delivery, you know, don't go with Joe's delivery service. And then this guy says, I am Yuri. I am professional delivery guy. And he's like sitting on the packages and kicking him with his rock band and stuff.
So Saturday Night Live had a skit where there was a service, a delivery service that would take the blame for you shipping something late and claim that they lost it.
They would
stress the package and the guy would get yelled at.
That's so funny.
You know, in an unrelated note though, I know that Russia and China were not invited to this Security Council, but in an unrelated note, there's a new piece of ransomware being tested this week while that council was being, convened, called the, I'm going to butcher this name, the Yanluo Wang ransomware.
Yanluowang.
Yes.
Yanluo Wang.
Named after a Chinese deity, one of the 10 kings of hell. And it's
that's the god of being left out of ransomware meetings.
You're probably right.
He's seeking his revenge, and that's why they were invited. They just declined because they were busy with the Yanluo Wang ransomware. Yeah,
I think the other 9 are Zoom, GoToMeeting, and team.
Oh my gosh.
So it is intriguing, the timing on this one, because researchers, I believe it's Symantec, their threat hunting team, discovered this, and it's in such early phases they can tell that it's just being developed, like it's brand new, and it's gathering information, right? Shocker. So it's going out and infecting things by gathering information on how it would move laterally inside of environments.
Wow.
Shocker.
Well, back to the whole ransomware thing, the meeting. How would you go about, if you wanted to get a movement to try to do something about ransomware, would you invite the two countries most suspected of harboring ransomware organizations?
Oh, that's tough. I don't know what I would do. Honestly, no, not Tom.
Well, if the UN had any teeth,
thank you, Lieutenant Dan.
If the UN had any teeth, what they'd do is they'd say, okay, we're going to take the percentage of ransomware attacks and where they originate from, based on, you know, 3 different services that track that, and we're going to add tariffs to the nation according to their share of the ransomware.
Yeah, my only concern with that is how hard is it to track where these attacks come from? Like attribution's
hard,
right? Take a look right now. There's an article that was released this week. Actually, I don't even know that I sent this to you guys. Google now has the Google Threat Analysis Group, or TAG, and they're tracking 270 state-sponsored hacker groups from across 50 countries.
It's not impossible. It's hard.
It's not impossible.
I gather it's hard.
It's difficult.
But here's the thing. If it was hard and you did it, there should be a physical, like, blockade, a physical war, a physical sanctions that takes place. Because in the few times you get it, that you want to use that to dissuade the next time they might try it.
Right. But I think that's always been the argument since, Reagan, was what is an appropriate response to these types of attacks?
Yeah.
Right?
War.
There's always that conversation. Is it
shoot them?
When they're trying to poison us, they're trying to kill us, they're trying to immiserate us. It's war.
Tomahawks.
I mean, I know I'm not the dove on this call, I'm the warhound. But there is a time when you have to result, if it's kind of like when the bully takes your lunch money every day and you hope that he'll come somehow grow a conscience. You got to pop him. You got to pop him in the face. You got to break his nose. It's not, When I did his homework, I made a mistake.
Right. So I can see Patrick. Patrick's reading email one day, double clicks on something. He goes, son of a, stands up, grabs his 9mm and walks out.
If the person who did it was in the building, I might.
Patrick Hines in Falling Down 2.
The ransomware story.
Oh, you better hope I never run for political office.
I know, right? No kidding.
That's so awesome. They're gonna listen to these a lot.
All right, so the Yan Luong ransomware, I think we can put that one to bed. There's nothing really we can do about that one.
Oh, we'll be hearing more about that one in the future.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. It's in its early stages. Give it time.
All right, and just because we missed talking about Microsoft, let's talk about Microsoft.
Huh. Yeah, so they believe that they have some features and configuration settings in Windows 11 that can mitigate ransomware, and I'm sure they do.
Wow. That's cool.
But they've been doing this for a while, and they've been obviated very often.
Yes.
So basically, every time they try something, there's a way around. And that's the cat and mouse game. But right. At least they're trying, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, if there's a way to turn it on, then there's a way to turn it off.
Apparently, the way to turn it on is it's called tamper protection, and it's in Defender. Microsoft Defender.
One of their best products.
Yeah. So it's a tamper protection feature, and apparently we'll link to it, and you can get the link.
But it's against human-operated ransomware.
Hmm.
Cyborg-operated ransomware, not so much. Is that
probably that'll bypass it
all.
I
think there's provisos there. I think it depends. I always thought that it was one of the approaches that Microsoft could take is if something's copying data really fast, maybe you should think about that. If it's changing files, if it changes file headers.
Yeah, that's tough.
Maybe they should have started with canine operated ransomware. That might have been easier, low hanging fruit.
Right.
And then make their way up to human.
Yes, right.
Avian.
Avian operated ransomware. Pigeons. It's the pigeons, man.
Well, but you were saying it's hard.
I know. I think, honestly, if it can be turned on, it typically can be turned off. Take a look at all the protections that are there now, like with ASLR and DEP. And we don't need to go into, I know I'm throwing a lot of acronyms out there. But these are ways of, protecting programs when they're running to make sure nothing malicious is happening. And all of those can be turned off. Memory has protections where you can say, hey, you can't execute code from this section of memory. And all you need to do is then go call the Windows function that says, nope, let's re-enable execution here. So I think we see this as a cat and mouse game constantly where, Microsoft, and or operating system to be named puts in protections. And then, really clever researchers or, nefarious hacking gangs find, different ways to turn those protections back off. That's not to say don't turn them on, right? Defender is fantastic and does a really good job. And Microsoft, I have to give them kudos. 15 years ago, they were probably the brunt of every security joke. And they've done a really good job of turning things around. So
yeah, I agree. And conversely, the platform that everybody thought was the best and impenetrable, namely Mac OS X or OS, has suffered malware attacks and ransomware. And
once you get a certain market share, you become
the target.
That's when and therefore, and no one's that good. We're not anywhere close to this because we have to live with the legacy because legacy is so valuable. But the only way we're ever going to get secure computing is if we build it into the chips. And that means you're going to have less flexibility. You're going to have more purpose-built systems.
Because what do they say about convenience?
It's the enemy of security.
Yeah. Well, and security must be the enemy of convenience then.
It always is, yeah. But the problem even with building things into chips is those chips then need to be updated. And the code is still written by humans. And if you can't patch easily, there's all sorts of issues. And right. So what I'm saying is we're all going to be employed for a very long time. It's a tough game.
It's a tough game. Especially as things get more and more secure.
Yep. Yep.
We've been talking about the security universe. Let's talk about the security Thingiverse.
Ah.
What the hell is Thingiverse?
First off, I love Thingiverse.
Yeah.
What is it?
Cool stuff.
So Thingiverse is a collaborative place where, you know, you're a designer, you have a 3D printer or whatnot, and you're a designer and you want to design something really cool. So all of you probably remember, like, actually, I have so much 3D printed stuff around this house, even cable ties. Oh. Like my desk right now, I have cable ties.
Let me tell a story.
3D printed here. Yeah.
So Dwayne has a sliding door, and one of the mechanisms broke in his sliding door.
Yep.
So he took it, scanned it with our scanner, and then 3D printed the piece on with carbon fiber.
Carbon fiber. Yep.
What?
And then fixed his door, and now his door is perfectly back to normal.
How long did that whole process take?
About 30 minutes.
Dope.
So, yeah.
Like a phone? You take a phone scan of it? Or
There are phone packages now where you can scan around a 3D object and get a really decent 3D scan. We have a 3D turntable scanner. So just it was a broken door handle hinge.
If it was broken and you scanned it, then wouldn't you have replicated a broken piece?
I would have. So the way it had snapped, I could actually put it back together so it looked like it was going to work. Then put it on the table, scan it, import it into a 3D design package so I could clean it up. I actually then etched our last name into it for the lulls. Cool. And then printed it. And within 20 minutes, I had it back on the door and it was up and running. And yeah,
wow.
The 3D printers are awesome. So Thingiverse is fantastic.
You did the same thing for your door, right? I mean, I know this is interesting. I know it's interesting to Carl because it's interesting to me. You also fixed the sliding door of your car, your minivan?
I've fixed a lot of parts on my minivan. Minivans are fantastic.
With 3D printing.
With 3D printing. Even down to like the keys for my car. You know the little key fob? I dropped that thing so many times, it's cracked. Yeah. Designed a case to hold the key fob and then just 3D printed it. Took 10 minutes on the printer. Came out, snaps right on, holds the electronics, all the buttons are there, that sort of stuff. I got the design for that fob on Thingiverse.
Okay.
Went up there, somebody had the same van I have, had designed the casing for the fob, and I just downloaded it, printed it, took 10 minutes, and I could then snap it right onto the fob.
So how much is a carbon fiber printer?
They're honestly cheaper. They're super cheap. There are the Ender series and that sort of stuff where you can get a really high quality, like the printer I have costs $10,000, but that's because we do printing of devices at manufacturing levels. Right. But if you want just a printer that does that quality, for $300, you can get a really good printer that will print carbon fiber.
To have the carbon fiber material. How much, would it cost Patrick to 3D print, say, 10 Glocks?
Which model?
10 to 15 years in prison. That's, I think, what it costs.
It depends on what state.
I mean, would it be cheaper to buy them or buy the carbon fiber? Does the carbon fiber have a serial number in it?
I prefer ABS for my 3D printed guns.
Yes, so you can leave them out in the heat. Good for you.
All right, Thingiverse. What happened?
So what's great about Thingiverse is you can make these little designs, and then you can put them up there, and people can subscribe and pull them down and print whatever they want. There's so many great designs up there. I mean, those little SD cards you might jam into a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
I've heard of those. Off.
Yeah. So I have 3D printed a tiny case that can hold 7 of those. And they slide out so that you can just pop one out, use it, and then pop it back in. And it's just a tiny little case that holds onto them. It's awesome.
Does it work as a suppository applicator as well? Or
just in case you're looking to hide 7 of them someplace. That's what you put into the designer. Can we have more rounded edges on this, case? It's a little too sharp. Huh, that's awkward.
How did we get an R-rated security podcast? All right, How did that happen?
We're calling this show The Sharp Edges. Beware the sharp edges.
So Thingiverse is a great place for makers to share these types of designs. Apparently, a year ago yesterday, some nefarious person got a 36 gig backup file, what looks like it's the database of 228,000 users. From the Thingiverse site. So I don't know if they're still sort of unclear on where all the data came from, whether it was somebody backed up the database and it somehow made it off site, or somebody, you left open the port access to the database and anybody on the internet could connect to it. And if it had a bad password, you could connect in and back up the data. So there's all sorts of different ways of potentially pulling this data off.
Okay.
The thing I would say is, even though it's 228,000 unique email addresses,
the passwords were too well encrypted to be broken.
Yeah, the other data in there, I mean, there was username, of course, but then there was email address, your password, but your password was bcrypt encrypted. So
it was decrypt encrypted, so it was decryptable.
B as in beta.
Bravo.
Yeah, oh, bravo. Okay. There you go.
Bcrypt.
I don't know what that is. Is that like a hash code?
Yeah, it's a hash code. It's just one of the algorithms out there. But honestly, for you to crack that takes forever. Even with our crack cluster that can do billions of guesses a second, bcrypt, it doesn't get anywhere near that guess range. So chances are your passwords are fine.
But the PII is still leaked.
Yeah.
That's the emails personal, and all that stuff.
Personally identifiable information, yeah. So apparently this was enough of a concern for Troy Hunt to tweet about it. Anyone got a security contact at Thingiverse? They're not replying to direct messages or on their contact form. I use this site a lot myself, so I'd really like to get in touch with someone there.
That's Troy.
Yeah.
Well, Troy's done a great job. He's become, in 2013, I think he started Have I Been Pwned as a kind of as an experiment, and now he's become the man.
He's the Stack Overflow of password data.
Yeah. And he's done a great job of curating that data and helping people learn. And he's even testified in front of the U.S. Congress about stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Troy's a good guy.
And a little bit more research here. It actually looks like the data was leaked over an S3 bucket that was misconfigured.
Oh, that's such a common story. But it is saying that that it was leaked intentionally by an insider, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. But there are so many times when that's unintentional. S3 buckets.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we see that all the time. Yeah, where someone will – so an S3 bucket, for those of you who don't play around with a lot of AWS or Amazon services, it's think of it like a file share that you can access over the web, and you can permission it in a bazillion different ways.
Like
right?
a Dropbox.
Yeah, kind of like a Dropbox, right.
Well, when I think of the word leak, I think of somebody doing something intentional to bring it to somebody's attention. Like, here, I've got this data – and now I'm sharing it with you. That's a leak. When I think of a misconfigured S3 bucket and then somebody discovers it, I think of that as a hack of a lax in security.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting you say that. Our department has run into a few things I would call leaks recently that were misconfigurations of important information that we can't talk about right now, but at some point.
Please don't talk about that.
Okay. Well, if they had a misconfiguration and then they sent an email to somebody and said, hey, connect to this share, that's a leak.
Well, yeah, I mean, the word has the double meaning. There are definitely configurations that leak information, credit card information, things like that. But there's also the leaking of information where you reveal something you shouldn't be revealing.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't read exactly what you guys are talking about. I don't know if this was when the S3 bucket is how the hackers decided to put it out on the web rather than pastebin, or that's how we think they originally got the data.
Oh, okay. So there's some unknowns here.
Right. Right. But it is interesting because S3 buckets, there are tons of tools out there to scan for open S3 buckets. But S3 buckets generally have massive GUIDed names, right? So it's not like you're going to guess them. It's not like s3bucket.securitythisweek.com. It's generally not going to be what it is. So it's almost like a treasure hunt, and you go out there and you find an S3 bucket that may be open, and then you can find all sorts of troves of data, which is interesting. The other thing that I love about the security world is everybody has a handle. So the exposed data was first discovered by a security researcher and cyber enthusiast known as Pom Pom Purin. Pom Pom Purin.
That can't be a name he gave himself.
Maybe it's the last name. I don't know.
My handle's going to be Sharp Edges.
I thought it was your pet's name and then the street you grew up on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And 123.
That's definitely I'll be Sergeant Lincoln.
Carl's password, 123. with an ad sign. All right. Well, you know, there wasn't too many things to take home this week, but as always, you know, make sure you're patched. Make sure you use two-factor authentication on everything you log into. Try to use a password manager and don't take any wooden nickels.
I don't know. They might be valuable. It might be worth more than a nickel.
Right.
Good point. All right. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.